You're listening to The Infected.
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 And you're listening to The Infected.
And you are listening to The Infected.
Hi there, and we're glad to see you have found us in the online jungle of podcasts and offerings these days. For the next 60 minutes or so, please consider this your own personal niche, where we discuss and play the best music, with a dark lining, of course, because that's how we like it. So sit back, turn up the volume, and open your mind to the sounds of The Infected. And don't wander off too much, because in the final minutes of this podcast, we have a nice musical challenge for you. You can easily win a back-printed The Infected t-shirt by just listening to the show. Jeroen and I have been doing this podcast since the outbreak of COVID-19 in Europe last year. So we're basically two men with a passion for music. You could also call us Twice a Man. And that's exactly how our first band is called. This is Twice a Man with the wonderful track Sorrow.
Thank you.
So that was Sorrow from the second album from 1983 of Twice a Man. And that album is called The Sound of a Goat in a Room.
Really?
Yeah. Let's. Yeah. Exotic.
That is a funny name. But this is an interesting track. I really liked it. The complex rhythm, the guitar solo, which came out of nowhere, but fits right in. And you don't hear that a lot in this type of music.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The multi-layeredness of the track, echo effects coming in the second half. Yeah, there's a lot going on. And I like the atmosphere of the track. So very interesting.
Yeah.
It sounded a bit newer to me than, you know, early 80s. But I guess these guys were ahead of their time.
Well, they kind of were a little bit ahead of their time, at least in Sweden. But I stumbled upon this band by accident. I bought a record around 10 years back or something with a cool looking album cover and an intriguing band name, Twice a Man. It was in a thrift store just around the corner of the place that I used to work in Amsterdam. So I could take a chance for $1, right? Thrift store prices. And this again turned out to be one of the best buys ever, because that was the first album by Twice a Man. It turned out Music for Girls from 1981. So I ended up buying more and more, and everything that I could find at reasonable prices of these guys. I also did some research because I liked it so much back in the day. And what I found out was this. So in 1981, Twice a Man became one of the first fully electronic bands in Sweden. So Twice a Man consists of Dan Söderqvist and Carl Gasleben as founding fathers of the band. And they initially had another name, Cosmic Overdose.
Okay.
The band was asked to choose a less hippie sounding name because they were opening for New Order. And this is so cheesy, right?
Yeah, it's probably some of the best advice they got.
Yeah. Definitely. So the promoter of the concert gave them a list with suggested names, and they kept the one that they chose for opening for New Order, and that was Twice a Man. So they stuck with it. Initially, they made quite accessible, like dark wave synth pop songs.
Mm-hmm.
They're also one of the few bands that have bridged the gaps between new wave sound and also rock and more experimental stuff. So they evolved during their existence. And during the 90s, the band became a project group composing music for film, dance and theater performances, audio books, computer games. So they did a lot. But I do like their earlier albums the most. Maybe the first two or first three, because they have that mood that we just talked about, that come together in this song Sorrow we just heard, and that dark edge that I'm always looking for. So after that it became more poppy, and those tracks don't really stand out in my opinion, but this is a diamond in the rough that I wanted to share today.
Yeah, quite the find. Of course, again, you and your radar, you know, just looking at the cover of an album and then somehow sensing that this is the album you want to pick up out of all the albums that are there in the thrift store and never having heard of them.
I bought more mishaps than good ones, in all honesty. Maybe two-thirds crap, one-third silver to gold, but
I guess it's like an investment strategy where you spread the risk, right?
Yeah, for $1 each, $2 each, it's easy. It's an easy choice.
Right, yeah, so you invest a little in a lot of things, and then some of them turn out to be solid gold, like this one.
Exactly.
Like it. Exactly. Really good.
Glad to hear that.
Infected classic.
Yeah, we have three classics in this episode, the way I count them, but I guess it's all personal anyway.
Sounds good.
So the first classic I want to talk about is, and I promised this to you and to our listeners, is a song by Alphaville.
Ooh, nice, yes.
And the song I want to play today is Forever Young.
Mm-hmm.
Alphaville was a German synth-pop / rock music group, the members being Marianne Gold, Bernard Lloyd and Frank Mertens. Forever Young was one of their greatest hits. On the surface, it's a hopeful song celebrating the virtues of youth, but the closer listen reveals a theme of aging and death. It's also a real sign of the times, being an 80s song. You can tell the song was written during the Cold War from the lyrics, "We're only watching the skies, hoping for the best, but expecting the worst. Are you gonna drop the bomb or not?" The whole song breathes a melancholic atmosphere, the awareness that life is short and can end any time. For me, it has special meaning, since me and my friends used to enjoy this song in the 80s. However, since then, I have lost three of my best friends before the age of 35 due to suicide, drug abuse and cancer.
Wow, man.
They were unique and irreplaceable, and I still miss them. This song will always be dedicated to them. because they never got the chance to grow old. This is Forever Young.
Let's dance in style, let's dance for a while. Heaven can wait, we're only watching the skies. Hoping for the best, but expecting the worst. Are you gonna drop the bomb or not? Let us die young, or let us live forever. We don't have the power, but we never say never. Sitting in a sandpit, life is a short trip. The music's for the sad man. Can you imagine when this race is won? Turn our golden faces into the sun. Praising our leaders, we're getting in tune. The music's played by the
quite a personal story, brother.
Yeah.
At the beginning of this track, gives it a different layer. I just started thinking about these guys and their age and the sadness of it. And also the extra layer that you mentioned within the lyrics of this song, the sadness part. I never heard that. But I always thought it was kind of a romantic and happy song. But no, not so much. It's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless. Okay.
Yeah, it turns out these days it's also very popular at funerals, which is not something I'm sure they counted on when they wrote it.
No, I don't think so, man. And they still got 4.5 million listeners monthly on Spotify. That's something. It's out of this world.
Yeah, the numbers are crazy, man. The song was a hit in some European markets when it was released, but it never really got beyond number 28 in the UK and never even entered the top 40 in the USA. Despite 3 separate releases by the band of this track. A huge number of acts covered the song over the years, the last being Becky Hill in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
The original Alphaville version of this track has been streamed over 600 million times if you add up just Spotify and YouTube.
They must be enjoying their pension right now, counting money.
Yeah, this is one of those slow burn tracks, right? That doesn't immediately take off when it's released, but over time it keeps accumulating views and people keep turning back to it. So it also has a very dreamy and atmospheric music video directed by Brian Ward. that shows the band performing in one of the halls at Holloway Sanatorium in Virginia Water, England. So choosing a sanatorium as a setting for your video clip is another clear indication that it's not all sunshine in this song. Yeah. And you see people ranging from children to the elderly, dressed in ragged finery, awaken to watch the band and then walk through a diamond-shaped glowing portal into some sort of other dimension. It's quite special.
I have to look it up. Never seen it, as far as I know.
Well, put the link on theinfected.nl.
That's cool. So the accent of the singer, I did notice that it was not a Brit or an American. So you mentioned this German-based band.
That's correct.
Oh, he sings in English quite well and enjoyable, I must say.
Yeah, he doesn't sound like a native speaker, but he also doesn't sound like a German.
Exactly. Yeah, this not bad at all.
No. Not too bad, no. So actually, the best moment I've heard this song being played was just a few years ago, with another surviving member of the same group of friends visiting a Kim Wilde concert together. As an encore, Kim Wilde played Forever Young to an audience of aging fans, and she was smiling a knowing smile. It was a bit tongue-in-cheek for her to play this song, and yet it created a tangible sense of connection in the audience. And finally, it was an emotional moment for the both of us all at the same time. So Forever Young will always be a special song for me.
Yeah, I can definitely understand. I will never look at it the same way again after your story. I wouldn't want to be forever young, by the way, to keep it a little bit light. I found it to be a struggle dating girls that didn't want to have anything to do with me and in the pub and everything. I have much more peace and harmony these days, my friend, in my early 40s. Aging is quite nice.
Yeah, yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, I guess that's why he sings, "Do you really want to live forever?" Yeah. And it's something to think about, right? Because the gift of eternal life is something that a lot of literature and art is talking about. But you have to wonder whether it's really a gift or rather a curse to live forever.
Infected Classic. So to keep it in the German realm, I believe that Andrew Eldritch was a German-born man that grew up in Britain, but correct me if I'm wrong. So right now, I'm gonna plug in the song Flood 2, one of my all-time favorites within the goth genre and also by Sisters of Mercy. Let's listen to some music. This is Flood 2. We'll be right back.
Yeah, I'm always disappointed when I get hit by that fade out. Even though it's after like 6 minutes, it's still like, oh.
Is this some pure God power or what? Jeez, come on. Right? This is like you have the singer of Bauhaus is the godfather of God, but Andrew Eldritch is a close second, if you ask me.
Yeah, definitely. He must be his lieutenant or his second hand. Yeah, that sounds good.
It's also quite unbelievable that we didn't play anything by the Sisters of Mercy in all three seasons we did so far. However, in our first season, while we were still discussing everything in Dutch, we did mention the horrible concert that they did in 2016, where I actually walked out from. It was in Paradiso, Amsterdam. It was two guys with dreadlocks behind a laptop on stage, and Andrew Eldritch. Yeah, sounded like crap, basically. His voice is not the strongest or holding up as it is, but that was really something else from the skinny and amphetamine-taking but very enigmatic frontman that we knew him by in the late 80s and 90s. He was now a fat and bald man standing on stage that needed to make some money for his retirement, I guess, because that's how I felt. There was no passion at all. Sorry, a rant, but it's just something I had to mention because sometimes it's maybe best to enjoy the music of the gods of the 80s, but skip their live shows sometimes, if we can ever see one again.
Yeah.
So, Sisters of Mercy is still a band that have put out a lot of quality, to be really honest, if you look back.
Oh, yeah.
I'm referring mainly to their first two albums and the countless singles and EPs they did. It was really a band that put out a lot of singles and not that much albums, especially the album Floodlands that this track is also on. And
yeah, that's my favorite too. Bloodline.
So it's bombastic, it's powerful, as you just heard, 6 minutes long, doesn't drag, doesn't get boring. And for our listeners that don't know the Sisters of Mercy yet, that's no problem at all. Let me give you a little bit of background story. They were an English rock band formed in 1980 in Leeds, and after achieving early underground fame there, the band had their commercial breakthrough in the mid-80s, the MTV era, and they kept up until the early 1990s. And these days, the bands, they're a touring act only. They don't put out new music anymore. They have released 3 albums in total. So that's First and Last and Always from 85. Then you have Floodlands from 87 and Vision Thing. It's a really poor one. The third one, you can skip that altogether. Each album was recorded by a different lineup, but singer and songwriter Andrew Eldritch and his drum machine, of course, are the only points of continuity, basically. So the Sisters of Mercy stopped recording new material when they went on strike against their record label, East West Records, whom they accused of incompetence and withholding royalties, and they had pressured the group to release at least 2 more studio albums that they didn't want to, because they don't want to be forced. And Andrew Eldritch certainly comes across as someone that you don't get along with easily if you watch his many famed interviews on MTV. So there's that.
So he had a fight with each of his bands, and he had a fight with his record company. It was probably all their fault, right?
Yep. Yeah, I probably everyone's fault. We humans have like 7 defense mechanisms, right? Mm-hmm. 6 or 7. So I'm sure he knew how to use all 7.
Yeah. At the same time. Yeah.
Sometimes you have to take shit to get somewhere in life. That's just the way it is, in my opinion. Don't always, but if you always say, screw everything and this is me, and you don't adjust, you don't really get really far. Usually, but there are exceptions.
I guess if you're a painter or something, right? Somebody who doesn't depend on anyone else, at least for the creation of his art, it's easier to have an attitude like that. But if you want to be in a band and you want to have a record company help you out and you need producers and stuff like that, right? And I think some of those skills...
Or in corporate life or in media or wherever, sometimes it's just make a compromise and the other times you win. You can't win every time. That's my experience.
But really, you know, if you have made 2 albums like the Sisters of Mercy have, or really like Andrew has, maybe, it's more than many people have achieved in a lifetime of making an effort. So those 2 albums are great. Everybody, if you don't know them, go check them out.
Absolutely.
And what I like best about them is that, as you said, it's real goth. It's almost textbook goth music. But it's not trying to be very heavy. It's not heavy-handed. It's actually quite open, and still it has this really dark atmosphere, right? Where you see that many goth groups are trying to be as heavy and gloomy and doomy as possible. But this is more from within. Let's put it that way.
I think you're right. In the interviews, he also mentioned he doesn't want to be labeled. He doesn't recognize himself as part of that movement. He just wants to make great music. He also did a lot of great video clips. Also a girl, I forgot about her name. She joined the band and they had a lot of really good MTV clips to go along with these tracks. So, but I agree, man. If you did 2 really memorable albums and plenty of singles, it should last you a lifetime. If you don't spend it all on drugs, like Andrew did.
Yeah, they must have been pretty expensive too, those drugs.
Yeah,
because they did make a lot of money in their time.
Yeah, I should think so.
The Infected.
Okay, so moving on to something slightly more recent. I want to take you to 2014. This sounds like it's only yesterday, but actually it's also 7 years ago. I want to play a song by Magnus. I don't know. They're Belgian, so you never really know. It's a Belgian group. It's actually a collaboration between a Belgian singer, composer, and musician, Tom Barman, who you may know from Deus.
Great last name.
Yeah. And techno DJ and English-born Belgian producer, CJ Bolland. Do you know him?
Oh. Of course I know him. That song Camargue that he did on R&S Records is still one of the best house anthems ever.
Right, so he was a house producer, and he is the man behind house acts like The Project, Space Opera, CJ, Pulse, Angel, and Sonic Solution, just to mention a few. So these 2 guys, They don't like to be boxed in genres, and their love of music clearly speaks from their collaboration in Magnus. Magnus delivers a synthesis of house, techno, pop, electro, breakbeat, drum and bass, rock, and remarkably old-fashioned new wave. One song sounding very different from another. It's a wild mixture of genres, all bound together by their love for darkness. 10 years after the release of their first album, The Body Gave You Everything, they released a second one, which was called Where Neon Goes to Die. This was 2014. And this is a single from that album, Singing Man.
Nice. So this brings back some memories of Depeche Mode, modern Depeche Mode as well. And the production is out of this world. I think there are a lot of expensive synthesizers that have come into play, knowing these two gents a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice energy, nice and fresh. It's good timing.
Yeah.
This track.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit of critique. They filled up so much with singing, so almost the whole track doesn't have any space. Every space that there was filled with lyrics and singing. A bit too much to my taste, but that really shouldn't take the fun out of this track.
Do you remember the name of the track?
No, man, I'm so bad. Yeah, Singing Man. Yeah, they did their best. Holy shit. Yeah, touche. Okay, touche. Yeah.
So actually, incidentally, did you recognize the singer? Because it's not Tom Barman.
I did not. Not right away, no.
Because the singer is actually Editor's frontman Tom Smith.
Oh. Yeah, I know some tracks by the Editors, but couldn't have picked him out. But
no, he helps give Singing Man that special Depeche Mode atmosphere.
I didn't pick him out immediately.
And the track really is a homage from these three seasoned recording artists, a finely crafted tribute to their undeniable love for dark 80s wave pop. And it may be worth your while to check out their album, Where Neon Goes to Die. But keep in mind that they have a different collaboration on almost each of the songs with different artists. And the styles on the album are really all over the place. Even if each one of the songs is layered, and they all sound great.
Well, they definitely brought back that 80s synth pop feel. And also Where Neon Goes to Die. What a great album name.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, totally moody. Love it.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm now seeing that they do collaborate with a lot of... I'm interested.
Yeah.
I should check it out. So, 2014, I also brought something with me this week that is a bit recent. And I'm talking about the track Die Reisen by Doppler Effect and Visonia. And...
Wunderbar.
Wunderbar, yeah. Doppler Effect is a German... No, it's not German. They're from Detroit, actually. Let me rephrase that. So
Yes,
they are. Doppler Effect is an electronic duo from Detroit. They have been active since 1995. And their name rang a bell. I know one other track by them that's also really great. But I stumbled upon this one through my friend Dave. That's also sometimes listening to the show. Hi, Dave. Thanks for this track, if you're listening. So, a small fact... Because a Doppler effect, or the Doppler effect, refers to the change in wave frequency during the relative motion between a wave source and its observer. So, to put it simply, for instance, when a sound object moves towards you, like a car, the frequency of the sound waves increase, leading to a higher pitch. So that's called the Doppler effect. I didn't know. But these are the fun things you find out when doing some Googling to discover some backgrounds on the tracks that we play.
And then when it moves away from you, it sort of goes down?
It then decreases. Yes, yeah. Probably. If you look at Formula One matches or something and the camera moves with it, I think that's the truth, yes.
So this is the source of the...
That's absolutely right. Oh. So back to the band, Doppler Effect. They're one of many electro projects that involve Gerald Donald, that's the driving force, although he refuses to confirm or deny his participation, so nice and mysterious. He typically uses pseudonyms such as Rudolf Klorzeiger and Heinrich Müller, and as these German names and scientific themes suggest, science is a major influence on Doppler Effect. And in the mid-90s, they made their first tracks about sex with mannequins and robots wiping out the human race and stuff like that. Then they disappeared from the stage for a couple of years. And when they returned in 2003, the sound was much more serious. So no more mannequins and robots, but they focused on scientifically themed deep space excursions. And the group also collaborated with Visonia, and that's a Chilean producer called Nicolas Estany. And they did this single, Die Reisen, together from 2014. So in the same year, the track that we just listened to, Jeroen, right?
Yep.
We're about to play it. The track is very warm. As you will soon hear, it's immersive. If you know Doppler Effect a little bit, you will hear their recognizable and signature arpeggiated basses that kind of take you away. And it also gives a nice cosmic or a spacey feel. Nice and spiritually uplifting piece of music for you right now. This is Die Reisen.
Thank you.
Wow, what a trip, Gove.
Yeah, uplifting was not maybe the right description, but it definitely takes you away, right?
Yeah, no, you put me on the wrong foot there a bit, but I thoroughly enjoyed this. Actually made nice. Me want to light up a blunt or a joint or whatever you kids call it these days.
Actually sounds like a good plan.
But
I haven't done so in ages.
No, me neither, but yeah. This, if I would, this would be a great soundtrack to it. Yeah, yeah.
Makes sense, man.
They take their sweet time.
Yep.
And they do incorporate all kinds of different, you know, twists and turns. But really, it flows from the speakers like a sort of a mellow, dreamy syrup. It's really quite the change of pace for this show. And I guess it's what we needed. So thanks.
I think so. Approaching the end, that bubbly bass line that is almost hypnotizing. Nice.
Yeah.
Infected classic.
So, I think we have one classic left.
Yeah,
right?
We do. Another Infected classic. So, we're going to be playing Vienna by Ultravox. This was a big hit for them worldwide. I remember it making a huge impression on me at the time the song came out in 1980. And yet, it never reached number one in the UK. Can you remember when you first heard this song?
Yeah, man, but... No, I can't remember what year it was, but I do remember hearing it for the first time. Also that kind of bombastic, the way the track opens.
Yeah. Actually, like so many of the famous hits we've discussed, the song came together very quickly. The drummer was using a CR78 drum machine and was playing Cynair drum pads at this time. And he played a pattern with the synth pads over the drum machine while they were in the rehearsal room. And he said something like, well, what about this then?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And there it was, the classic Vienna rhythm.
Yeah.
So the band started playing to it and used the chorus idea they had laying around and that they didn't have a verse for so far. And it all just clicked in a couple of hours. The only thing that was added in the studio was the middle solo section of the song. Now, keyboard player Billy Curry remembers where the lyrics came from. We were all being very arty, discussing the composer Max Reger, and Mitch Ure walked up and said in his Glaswegian accent, "That means nothing to me," and turned away. And when we came in, he put down this chorus using that very phrase.
Yeah, that's a famous one.
Yeah. So Ultravox was well pleased with Vienna. They knew it was the musical high point of the album that they were making, and they made it the title track, since it was the song that best represented what they were trying to do. And they had to fight with record company Chrysalis over having it released as a single. Chrysalis thought it was far too long at 6 minutes, way too weird for a top 30 chart hit, and much too depressing and too slow. Other than that, they liked it.
Okay.
Yeah. So an innovative video, the first really mini movie video, was filmed for this song, partly in black and white. The clip was directed by Russell Mulcahy, one of the biggest directors of the early 80s. The video was mostly shot around London, with scenes at the Gaumont State Theatre, Covent Garden Market and Circe's. And the scenes shot in Vienna were done on the fly, with the band and crew visiting the city for one day and exploring it by taxi with the help of a guidebook. One scene that stands out is the one where a tarantula crawls across the face of a man. Now, this brave soul is Julian Temple, who was another very popular music video director in those early years. When this was released, reviewers noted it was inspired by the Austrian symbolist painter Gustav Klimt and the Vienna secession movement from early in the 20th century. Singer Mitch Ure encouraged this analysis in some interviews that he gave at the time. However, he later admitted to Rolling Stone magazine that he lied to the papers about that at the time. The secessionists and Gustav Klimt, whatever. I didn't know about any of that stuff. I wrote a song about the holiday romance, but in this very dark, ominous surrounding.
Great, great accent, bro. You should do that more often. Oh, man.
So this track was actually produced by a German electro wizard, Conny Planck.
Okay.
And the link with the early 20th century Vienna only came into being when it was suggested by him. He said that for this grand epic, evoking the spirit of early 20th century Vienna would be fitting. Conny spoke about how everything was a big facade at the time. The music in the early 80s was becoming increasingly pompous to the extent that endings were almost getting longer than the piece of music itself. And Vienna, he wanted to be a response to that development. He was trying to make the track sound over pompous in such a way that it was obvious to the listener. Actually, pretty difficult to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's listen to it. Here it is. Ultravox, Vienna. Isn't that just a wonderful song?
It is. It is almost feels like a book or a movie. I quite like it. I can imagine it was kind of a stretch, even back in the early 80s. But yeah, I don't know. Like it. It's definitely still fresh sounding.
Yeah, it's unbreakable, this track.
Mm-hmm.
The sounds, it's so typically early 80s, and the drums are not even trying to sound like proper drums. They're just, you know, drum-like sounds. The atmosphere is just layers and layers on, you know, drama on top of each other. And somehow it just stands the test of time. And I was thinking, maybe we have some younger listeners to this show who managed to miss this one, because Ultravox is not a big band. And apart from this song, they haven't had a huge following. You may have missed this, and if you have and you've just discovered this song, you're welcome, because you know, we love sharing the music that we love, and we love sharing the Infection, and this is definitely a song that's worth sharing.
They did manage to staple that name Ultravox into the bigger names of the 80s on compilations, and not only with this track. I've heard some other tracks by them, but they do come up in my top 10 like synth pop acts from the 80s, to be really honest.
Yeah, Dancing With Tears In My Eyes is probably even more well known.
Yeah, also another one.
But I like this one better, because you cannot tip this atmosphere.
That's true. Hey, and another thing, did you hear any of their more recent work? Is it good or worthwhile, you think, or are they past their prime?
I don't think they've actually done anything except for releasing deluxe editions of Vienna and extended versions of tracks from the early 80s. I think their last proper album was like 2012. Mm. Brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one. Brilliant. That's the one I'm looking at right now. Yeah.
Well,
okay. Well, I'll check it out.
If you look at the number of streams this album has, the most well listened to track is the opening track, and it has 400,000 streams.
Yeah.
Which it has managed to gather in almost 10 years. So it's definitely not a hit, the album. But yeah.
Nope.
No, they.
We can conclude that.
If you
probably
compare that with the 47 million listens to Dancing With Tears In My Eyes, or the 32 million of Vienna.
Yeah.
You see that people appreciate their older work a bit more. As an extra to this great show, we have a treasure trove waiting for you at the website theinfected.nl. Go to the site to check out the links to the video clips of some of the tracks we just played, to access a number of mixed sets by hero DJs like Max Weemoed and DJ Dieter from Belgium. On the Infected.nl you can also read interviews with many of our heroes like Violent Vicky, Golden Plates, Then Comes Silence, Os Animaux and SNS Sensation. Read all of their stories on theinfected.nl. And while you're there, pick up some merchandise. We have awesome hoodies, phone cases and trendy t-shirts. Want free shipping? Use the code INFECTME. Infect me. By the way, if you'd like one of those t-shirts, you can win one right now. Because to close off the show, we have another 8-bit minute competition for you.
8-bit minute. 8-bit minute. 8-bit minute.
Last week's solution wasn't easy. It stumped some of our most regular contributors. What we did was, we played the 8-bit version of The Robots by Kraftwerk. And you got that right. That was quite the achievement.
Yeah, it took me some time, to be really honest. And did Jessica also send in something? Our US friend?
Well, actually, she liked the model better from the same album, but she still managed to...
That's a good one, I have to agree. But she did pick this one. That's good. Good for you, Jessica.
Well, actually, I started out with the 8-bit version of Das Modell, and then I thought, this is too easy.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, you know, I'd up the ante a bit and take a slightly less well-known track from the same album. And then immediately I get this comment from all you connoisseurs. Yeah, yeah, it's a nice pick, but it's not the best song from the album. I know, you're right, you're right.
No, it's a great, great, great one. And I had to pick my brain and torture myself to come up with the name. But very cool. Okay, so let me stop rambling and please introduce the challenge for us.
All right, on to this week's challenge. If you recognize the track you will hear right after this, let us know via Instagram, our website theinfected.nl, or mail us at theinfected@gmail.com. So, dear listener, which band and song do you hear in this 8-bit minute?
stay strange.